even the value of properties drop, right? I mean, that's fine because if I'm still getting paid cash flow, well, great, I won't sell it. I'll just keep taking the income, right? Versus some of the properties I had were negative cash flow and I became upside down. Now they're just a stressor. You don't want those.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, we have a very exciting guest. I'm so happy to introduce Chris Miles. Chris, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hey, it's such an honor to be here.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm excited to share your ideas and thoughts and stories with our listeners who I know are going to love it. So everyone, Chris Miles is the anti-financial advisor. And if you've been listening to this show for a while, you know that probably resonates with me a bit. He is a leading cash flow expert and helps entrepreneurs and professionals create cash flow and passive income now. He's also a podcast host of the Chris Miles Money Show, and he's been featured on US News, CNN Money, Bigger Pockets, et cetera. So really excited to get into your, everything that you like to talk about and teach people about. Why don't you start us off, Chris, with explaining a bit about how and why, you know, you got into this space?
You know, I got in because I was the financial advisor, you know,
literally,
Yeah. I was the salesperson in the suit, right? I was basically the person that was just a product peddler selling you. I call it Mexican food of the financial world, right? Because Mexican food's the same ingredients, you know, meat, cheese, lettuce, tomatoes, you know, all that kind of stuff. Right. But the way it's packaged gives you different, you know, different kind of results, right? You know, different names to that Mexican food. Well, that's all really financial advising is. It's really just comes down to mutual funds and insurances. Right. And even annuities, which is kind of a blend between the two. That's all they offer. And I did that for 4 years. I actually started doing that in the early 2000s. And after 4 years, again, I like evidence. I like to know that things work. And I realized that none of my clients were financially free, right? Like none of them, even the retired ones were still worried about running out of money. Mm-hmm. And even better yet, no financial advisors were. And I remember it was the end of 2005, one of my friends who was a real estate investor asked me, and we got in this debate about what's better, stocks or real estate. And he finally just said, he's like, Chris, well, how many of your clients are financially free? And I'm like, well, none, not even the ones I inherited from 20 years ago, from 20 years of financial advice, they're still not free. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, that's good. Good job, Chris. Way to go. Way to help nobody. He's like, all right, well, how about this?
Yeah.
How many of financial advisors are financially free, not off the commissions they're earning, but actually from the mutual fund investments that you guys have been recommending? And I thought about it and I thought, well, there's guys in my office been working since the late 1970s, right? Been working in there and they're still not financially free. So I said, none. And he's like, there's your problem. I went, well, give me the answer then. He's like, I won't give you the answer. You just get to argue with me that stocks are better. I was like, fine, I'm open. Give me something. And so he said, all right, fine. You know, if you're serious, and I don't think you are, but if you are, get the book by Robert Kiyosaki called Who Took My Money, which is a lesser known Rich Dad series book, right? Sum it up for you. It says mutual funds are horrible, right? That's pretty much what it is. Mutual funds suck.
Uh-huh.
And they say, go listen to this AM talk radio show locally here in Utah. Listen to this radio show of these two real estate investors talking about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did. And after a few months, by March of 06, I realized I couldn't stay in integrity and keep teaching people to do all this financial advice of save everything, spend nothing, save it in mutual funds and save it forever, save it for the long haul. Even if the market goes down, just stay in it longer. And if the market does go down, buy more because it's on sale. You know, even though when it goes up, I don't tell them to stop. I just tell them, keep buying, right? It's always a good time to buy for financial advisors. And hey, the market's returned 12%, even though in reality, it never has returned 12% for an extended period of time. Now, all this stuff, I realized it was just false and I couldn't keep teaching it, even though my pocketbook was tied to it. So I quit March of 06. I said, I'm done. I'll never teach about money again. I'll just be a mortgage broker and I'll teach ballroom dancing on the side, right? Little known fact, I was one of the nation's top amateur ballroom dancers.
Ooh.
Back in the early 2000s.
I love it.
So I was doing that. And eventually I wanted to know what these guys knew, these guys in real estate. And so I started to learn from them. And I started to do things where I focus on the exact title of the show, right? Really focusing on passive income and how to create that. So later in the year of 2006, I was actually able to retire financially independent. Now I only needed $3,500 bucks a month to do it, but I was financially independent. And I was like, crap, I'm almost 29 years old. What am I going to do now with the rest of my life? You know, what am I going to do? And so finally in 2007, I came out of retirement, so to speak, right? And started teaching people how to do it. Went through the recession, got my butt kicked big time in the recession, went from millionaire to upside down millionaire, but was able to battle back out without filing for bankruptcy. And by 2016, I escaped the rat race for the second time. And I was able to be financially independent again, this time much smarter, much higher numbers, because I've got a blended family of 8 kids. So it's definitely a lot more than what I had back in 2006.
Yeah. Very cool. Oh my gosh. So much there. Well, thanks for that history. Did an amazing job of explaining that. And, you know, and I mean, it's very humbling, right? I think to go through that experience that you went through with, you know, working for a financial advisory firm and then having that honest conversation with your friend and just really thinking about it, you know. So it's a very relevant topic to today because the financial advising industry controls so much of how people think about their money. So, well, there's a lot to go into here. How about we start with, I mean, one thing that you said that just caught my attention is that you did it smarter the second time. So what happened in 2008, you know, from a real estate perspective for you, and what lessons did you come out with it?
Yeah. So for me, it even started in 2007, right? Because that's when the market, credit markets, about July of 07. I remember that was exactly when the bank started saying, ooh, we're getting more strict on our lending guidelines. And then August, they got a little bit more strict. Then by September, they said, okay, we're not doing any 100% financing anymore, right? For me, I would say the biggest thing was two big things, right? One is that the very thing that got me financially independent were streams of income, right? And I was working like 3-4 hours a week, making $4,000 or $5,000 a month, which I was loving. The problem was that when I went to start a new company, I was starting with a bunch of partners and they said, hey, Chris, we're telling everybody how to get out of the rat race, but we want you to be focused 100% on us. So no more of this other, you know, passive income stuff that you're doing, which I should have thought saying, wait a minute, doesn't that put us out of integrity by me not having passive streams of income, right?
Yeah.
But they said, no, we want you to cut it off. So to be a team player, I said, all right, I'm going to cut off those streams and just focus on this one business income stream. So that was mistake number one. Mistake number two, even with the investing I was doing, I got overconfident, right? Because the thing I did right was I was focusing on monthly passive income, right? And I tell people now that boring is sexy, right?
I love that.
The more boring an investment, you know, the sexier it is to me.
I love that so much.
Yeah, I'm sure you say the same thing, right? It's like,
no, I don't, but I need to. I've tried to convince people that boring is sexy, but I haven't said that yet. So.
Well, it's true. Like if you think about like, even from a marketing perspective, right? When there's real estate education type programs out there, you know, you don't hear too many people saying, wouldn't it be awesome that you could drop 30 or 40 grand and make $300 or $400 a month? Like you don't hear that versus, hey, I was able to do this wholesale deal and made 25 grand, or I did this flip and made 100 grand, right? The bigger the number, the sexier it is. And that's what everybody goes for. And I did too. I was thinking, wait, I can make a lot of money and, you know, yeah, I can buy a $100,000 house, but if it appreciates, remember in 2006, everything was appreciating like crazy, kind of like now, but it was more unchecked, right? The lenders were just lending to anybody, you know, stated income loans. I even did a stated income loan in 2006 because I'm like, I got good credit. I can say whatever my income is and I can lie about it if I wanted to, right? But that wasn't the case, you know? So what happened is that, you know, I got overconfident. I started going for the big home runs. I'm like, instead of buying a $100,000 home that might increase by 10% value, what if I bought a $500,000 home that increased in 10% value, right? That's 50,000 versus 10,000. Let's go big. And as a result, and those are the ones that were affected the most, the higher priced homes were the ones that got hit the hardest during the recession, right? And so I ended up breaking all my own rules and I found myself in a hurt, you know, in a world of hurt. And, you know, and between that and then just thinking, oh, this is temporary. I'll dig my way out of it. I've always worked my way out. I'm smart. And eventually by 2008, I started looking at my numbers saying, man, if I don't fix this, I've got no money, no credit. Cause I'm starting to go late, you know, doing late payments. Right. I'm like, I'm in the hole 16,000 a month. Like I'm short 16,000 a month compared to what I'm earning. And so I was like, I got to get this fixed. And so I had it. I mean, it was hard. I mean, 2009, I remember April of 09, I got a knock on my door. They finally foreclosed on my house, you know, and it was right before my fourth child was born. So I paid the guy $2,000 to rent for 2 weeks so that we can have the baby, find a place to rent, and then move out. Right. So my, you know, my now ex-wife, she was having postpartum right while we're moving, which is always fun, you know? So, you know, those kind of things, like, that's why I look at, you know, really stable, steady, you know, boring things. I don't go gamble. I don't, you know, I had a guy I met with yesterday. He was talking about like how he's buying all these different stocks and trading, which I used to do, but I don't do that anymore. Cause I'm like, no, that's too much work. And there's not enough certainty with it, right? Like you can lose your butt doing that kind of stuff. And he's like, yeah, I'm even doing cryptos and this, like everything he's doing is all gambling and speculative. He has zero control of his money. Yeah. And I like control. Like I get, if anything, I became hyper control freak after the recession.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, major props to you, Chris, for coming back from something like that. You know, not everybody came back and continued to do real estate after getting beat up by that recession. And I mean, I think some of the things that you mentioned like are similar themes to other people that went through that time, you know, like maybe being over leveraged and trying to go for the home run. And so I just love that you really took those lessons to heart and, you know, have this new philosophy. So I know you've touched on it. How would you kind of describe that philosophy as to far as how you want to build passive income post-recession?
Yeah. I mean, it's really, instead of, I mean, it's great if you want to do active income. If you're an active real estate investor, fantastic. But know there's a difference between being transactionally wealthy and passively wealthy, right? And the latter has the most freedom. Transactional wealth, like, you know, I'm going to match my group with some of the top wholesalers and flippers in the country. But that being said, majority of them, if they were to lose their business, would be scrambling for work. They'd be scrambling for income because they don't have the passive income coming in. So the biggest advice I give people is make sure you have actual passive income coming in. So if you're a real estate investor, great. Well, even if you're doing it actively, even if you're a wholesaler, keep some of those properties for yourself. Hold on to some of those, even as long-term rentals, right? Now, if you're like me, I'm a passive investor. I don't even want to do active investing, right? I totally would like to be hands-off. I don't even like to property manage. So I buy turnkey properties. You know, I go to turnkey providers, say, what do you got? What are your best stuff out here in the Southwest or Mideast? And I go and I buy those. I buy nothing in the Western half of the US where we are, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, nothing looks good out here. Send me out east where it's cheap and I still get high rents, yeah. Right? Where I even on a turnkey property, I can make at least a 12% cash on cash return. That's kind of like my baseline.
That's really good.
So I go from that. You know, I'll do syndications. You know, a lot of my clients, you know, we hook them up with syndicated type deals. I don't raise any money, but I've got a lot of friends and contacts that have done syndications and paid even during the last recession. You know, they always held to their commitments. And so we look for things like that, or, you know, now I'm even investing in things like oil, mineral rights. You know, we're getting paid passive income monthly from the profits on that, you know, and that's even got some tax advantages to it, much like real estate. So there's all kinds of fun things you can do. I've been partnering up on guys that are buying and selling raw land right now. So I'm letting them do all the seller financing and all the deals. I'm just the financer. And so far, you know, in the last 3 months, we've made a 70% return on my money. So I'm like, cool, guys, keep it up. You know, let's keep going.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff I like now is that, again, there's again, asset-backed investments. There's certainty. We're not banking. You know, if you stress test it, you still make money. That's the key thing is that even if things don't go your way, will you still make money? And I think that's what's essential when you're looking at even right now where things are at a high everywhere, everything's a high, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think real estate's going to tank, maybe in California a little bit if interest rates go up a lot, but for the most part, I think it's going to hold pretty nicely because there's so little inventory for housing, where there was overbuilding happening in the last recession, there was overlending happening, and all that just created the perfect storm for, you know, bad real estate conditions.
Yeah, for sure. We're definitely headed into a different situation now, however that's going to play out, like none of us can really say, but you know, we do have some information, right? Like that, you know, the same conditions that were happening in 2006-07 with the et cetera, the subprime mortgages and the overbuilding, we don't have that. So it's going to look different. We don't know how exactly, but yeah, downside protection is something that I like to focus on as well. And I liked how you put it, you know, you want to make sure that if things don't go your way, that you're still going to make money, you know, and that's,
yeah.
And that's why, you know, where the boring is sexy comes in, right? Because it's just, it's not that exciting, right? And yet.
Well, even the value of properties drop, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's fine because if I'm still getting paid cash flow, well, great. I won't sell it. I'll just keep taking the income, right?
Yeah.
Versus some of the properties I had were negative cash flow and I became upside down. Now they're just a stressor. You don't want those.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
And so were those negative cash flow because they were just like higher rent properties, or what made them negative cash flow back then?
Yeah. Like I didn't care about the numbers as much on the rental side, the passive income side after a while, because I thought, well, appreciation will make up.
And so were those negative cash flow because they were just like higher rent properties, or what made them negative cash flow back then?
Yeah. Like I didn't care about the numbers as much on the rental side, the passive income side after a while, because I thought, well, appreciation will make up the difference, right? Eventually the value will go up and I'll make money on that side. So it's okay if I lose temporarily, because when I sell it, I'll make big money. But of course, when those conditions don't happen and you can't, you know, bank on that appreciation, right? Then now all you have is a losing investment. You have something that's costing you money, and yeah, you get great tax write-offs, but who cares if you don't have income coming in?
Absolutely. Okay. So I know you've said this in a few different ways, but would you just answer the question, why does every investor need passive income?
You know, yeah, you're right. I answered this kind of in a lot of ways, but the reason is because you cannot ever guarantee that your one stream of income, your mainstream of income, whether it be your business or your job, is going to be there tomorrow. 2020 was like a huge warning voice for it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, it was amazing because, you know, we saw so many businesses become non-essential, right? I mean, even like dentists, I have a lot of dental clients and they're like, we had a shutdown for 2 months. You know, what do we do in the meantime?
Yeah.
And now this year, now we're hearing that nurses and, you know, policemen, right? Defund the police. Now the people that were essential and the heroes of last year are now non-essential because of whatever choices they make this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of goes to show, and even military, right? We hear an Air Force firing people right now. So we already know that nobody's job, no one is safe. You know, I don't care if you're an entrepreneur or not, if you own your own business, you can be shut down by the government tomorrow if they choose.
Totally.
So you need to have multiple streams of passive income coming in that says, I work because I want to, not because I have to. And I'll tell you from a you know, being a business owner myself, there's a place of power you come from, because when you don't need the money, you make decisions very differently. And you attract people in a different way too, because you're relaxed. You don't care about trying to sell a product or try to sell and get a new client or customer, right? You don't worry about that because you know, hey, I don't need any of this business. Like I could shut it down today and be okay.
Yeah.
And when you're in that place, that's the funny thing is more people want to do business with you anyways,
yeah,
when you're in that place. So you actually end up making more money when you don't need the money. Versus when you need the money and you're desperate, you can never seem to work hard enough to get the money.
Totally. Yeah. There's so much there to what you just said. And I mean, I think, you know, one thing is like, knowing what it's like to live on low expenses, right? And being comfortable and happy with that, right? I mean, that's how I started my journey. My true journey was just like really paring down my expenses all the way. And then it kind of makes you invincible, right? Because you just don't need very much to be happy. You know that you can kind of always go back to that place where you strategized anyways. So I like that. And yeah, I mean, I think with every business, there is kind of like a hump where you're kind of trying to get just it. But once you have that like enough passive income to kind of cover those basic needs, and you know, yeah, it makes it kind of invincible, like we were saying. So
it does.
Very good stuff. And so how do you get your money to pay you twice?
Yeah. So this is interesting because I had learned this over time. I first learned it from real estate investors in 2006. But I mean, if you ever heard people talk about infinite banking,
yes,
right? Where you use whole life insurance and you save money in there, and most people just tell you how to use it as a retirement vehicle, which is crap because there's no way you can retire off those things, okay? Just like you can't retire off 401ks and IRAs and mutual funds, right? You can't retire off of life insurance either. But over the years, especially as I've been more an investor, I've learned that you can actually get these things as minimal cost as you can, much lower than what the infinite bankers teach. That's why I call it more like max ROI infinite banking. But what it allows you to do is you can actually build up this cash in here. And what it is, it just becomes a tax-free supercharged savings account, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you get the cost so low, almost everything you have in the first few years goes to cash, and then it's paying for itself by year three. Mm-hmm. Well, what happens is it's protected from lawsuits of creditors. Number one, that's big. Even if you have millions of dollars in there, they can't touch it in most states. The other thing that's cool is it's like a Roth IRA, but you don't have all these stupid rules and limits like 59 and a half. You got to wait till, right? Yeah. Or you got to leave it in there for so many years before you touch it. Totally. This one, I can touch the money in the first month and get access to that money and pull it out. That's all cool. Like that's the typical stuff you hear from insurance guys, right? The cool part though, is the fact you can leverage it. The fact that you can actually become the bank, just like the bank. It's just like a bank when you put money in their savings account, they're in debt to you, right? They're essentially paying you a point nothing percent line of credit interest rate, right? Yeah. While they go and they turn it over and invest it by lending that money out to somebody else. So if you put your money in a five-year CD, woohoo, you might get paid 1.5%, right? Totally. But if they turn out around and lend it at 3% for a car loan, they're not just making a 1.5%. They're actually making double the return on the interest they pay, aren't they? So it's actually 100% rate of return.
Yeah.
You can do the same thing with the life insurance policy where they're paying you at least 5% net return if you do it right, but you can get a line of credit as low as 3% a year. Yeah. So, and by the way, the line of credit, there's no minimum monthly payments like a HELOC. So it's like a HELOC that pays you, but you don't have to make monthly payments either. Yeah. So yeah, they'll charge you the interest, but you don't have to make monthly payments, especially if you're trying to do a flip or something like that. It's actually cheaper. And yeah. What I can do is now I'm making an extra 2% a year on top of whatever returns I'm making on the investment, because I can still take that money, invest it wherever the heck I want.
Yeah.
So I showed an example just to a bunch of wholesalers and flippers here just last week, right? Mm-hmm. I said, hey, if you put $250,000 down on a $1 million apartment building, right? Mm-hmm. That $250,000, of course, when you put the down payment, it comes from cash. Now, if you use your savings account, you're taking that money, you're taking that cash flow, I show it paying it back in over 9 years. After you pay taxes on that interest of 0.2% on that savings account, which is really good, guess what? You only make $1,800 in interest over 9 years on that money.
Insane. Mm-hmm.
But I can do that same thing with the life insurance, get a line of credit against it at 3% while I'm earning at least 5. And what ends up happening is I'm actually making an extra $145,000 over those 9 years instead of $1,800. Mm-hmm. You know, so I make way more money using this as like my savings account. What's that?
Plus you have the life insurance policy.
Oh yeah. And then, the death benefit's just like icing on the cake, you know, like,
yeah,
that's the thing I tell people is like, even if you didn't need the death benefit, that's the crazy thing. If you do it right. And again, most infinite bankers don't do this correctly, which is why it drives me nuts. This is actually what brought me out of retirement the second time. Cause there was a guy who was a podcaster and a neurosurgeon that said, Chris, like I got doctors that follow me. They got to understand this and how it works. And so I said, all right, I'll come out just to teach this. But then I realized in the real estate space, even though people have heard about it and you've probably had shows about it even in the past, again, those people are charging you way more in costs, insurance costs, than you need to be charged. And I have one client that it's actually going to cost them in the next 20 years, $2.25 million that we're able to make them more doing the same amount of money into a different plan.
Okay. So what are, cause I mean, I have had a lot of people come and talk about infinite banking, and I can't say that I really understand the details. So what is it that people are doing wrong?
Well, the infinite bankers, the problem is insurance companies don't train insurance agents how to design it the best way possible. They try to get you to do the same old Jane, plain Jane type thing, right? But if you minimize the cost as much as you can and design it just right, you can get to the point where within 5 years, you have more than what you've paid into it, right?
Yeah.
Most of the time, when I see infinite bankers, it takes at least 7 years to break even. You know, at best, maybe I might see somebody 6 years. Mm-hmm. So the problem is that people are end up, especially if you're putting a lot of money in these things, especially as a real estate investor, right? If you're trying to flow a lot of money in and you're going to constantly be paying more every year, more on insurance costs than you should be, that can total up to be usually hundreds of thousands of dollars over the decades. And so that's why it is. Again, it took me years to just kind of, I like to build better mousetraps. I like to break stuff. So it took me years coming from more from an investor perspective versus the plain old insurance agent perspective who don't even know how to invest in the first place. When they do that kind of stuff, it just doesn't work. And so you just got to be able to do it where you still keep it tax-free, but minimize the cost as low as possible. And unfortunately, the insurance agents, because they're not out of the rat race, because that is their livelihood and they think like insurance agents, whether they do it purposely or not, they're basically charging more in commissions than they should be because that's their livelihood. Mm-hmm. And you can cut them down even more than what most of them are doing.
Okay. Interesting. So then are you like doing whole life or do you know people who are, or do you sell Whole Life?
All the above. So I use it myself. I have clients that use it. I even design these policies and do that kind of stuff. So yeah, I do all the above.
Okay, cool. Really interesting stuff. And is there anything else you want to say, like on, let's say somebody has like a $400,000 house that they've paid off entirely. Cause I have a lot of people in this situation. but they don't necessarily want to refinance because they're like really conservative and stuff, but they kind of know they need to. So like, what would you recommend for them?
Well, I'll tell you, most of the people that I talk to are probably like your people. They're like the Dave Ramsey poster child, right?
Yeah.
Like they did everything Dave Ramsey said to a T, and then they come to us saying, I'm not free. Mm-hmm. Like, even though I thought debt-free meant freedom, I'm not free. I still don't have anything to show for it. Mm-hmm. I have net worth, but it's not paying me anything. I don't have passive income.
Totally.
So having to recontextualize that belief, and you said something interesting that was an interesting trigger, because a lot of people say what you just said, right? Which is, I'm more conservative. That's why I don't invest with my house, or I don't, that's why I use a 401k, right? Because I'm more conservative.
Yeah.
I would challenge that, because conservative in my mind means less risk, right? You're not risky. But the funny thing is, the people that say they're conservative are some of the riskiest gamblers I've ever met. Because one, if you're investing money in the stock market, you're already telling me you're a high risk gambler, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, but everybody's doing it. I'm just doing the S&P 500. What control do you have over that money? Zero control. Well, I pick my funds. That's not control. You don't, even if you pick the fund manager is the one that actually picks the stocks, and they can buy and sell whatever they want. I remember 2002. I was a financial advisor. I remember Enron, right? Everybody talked about Enron or WorldCom and all these companies that, that tanked. Well, a lot of mutual funds, most of them had Enron in their portfolio. They couldn't sell it off in one day like stockholders would. They would have to sell it off slowly over time, because legally mutual fund managers can't sell off everything or they crash the market. So even after the stock was coming down to zero, they were still holding on to it.
Oh,
right.
Man.
Mm-hmm. So you're gambling. If you have money in 401ks and IRAs, you're gambling on the government already, and you're gambling in the stock market. You are not conservative at all. You are a gambler. If you put all your money into a house, you're very likely could be a gambler, because you have no guarantees. If you don't pay your taxes on your house, they can still foreclose on you. You can lose your house even if it's paid off, right? So what you're not conservative. What you are is you're comfortable. You're a comfortable saver following the masses. But again, I like evidence. Ask yourself, are the masses becoming financially free? And the answer is 100% no.
Yeah.
And again, I'm meeting with the Dave Ramsey poster children, people that have gone above and beyond what Dave Ramsey has taught. They're not financially free. I had a guy that came to me, he seriously has $5 million in mutual funds, right? 5 million. He's 52 years old. He wants $500,000 a year of passive income. To do that, he has to have at least $15 million in there. By the way, the whole 4% rule, false. Like even Wall Street Journal came out recently saying it should be maybe 3%. And we were questioning that 20 years ago as financial advisors. So duh. So 3%, right? That means he has to have 15 million to live off $500,000 a year. Well, to get to 15 million, his financial advisor says, well, keep going. Maybe by 65, you'll be there. And he's got $5 million, right?
Yeah.
So again, he was like, I got to get away from this. And I said, yeah, absolutely. Like you got to get completely away from this, because that 5 million, even if you got a 10% return, would actually make you $500,000 a year.
$500,000. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's conservative. In my world, that's a conservative, totally safe return with real assets backing up, not gambling in stocks that are arbitrary based on zeros and ones and computers, right?
Yeah.
These are real assets that produce real income.
Yeah.
That is the key difference, right? So when you say people say like, I'm conservative. I paid off my house. I'm saving in my 401ks and IRAs. No, you're a gambler. You're just a comfortable saver because everybody else is doing it, but everybody else is not financially free. You need to do what we have done that has been proven to work. And by the way, there are tens of millions of us have invested in things like real estate that have much better odds of success than those that have been saving their mutual funds. And I can tell you, you just cannot become financially free in mutual funds easily. It's almost impossible to do. So follow that. So if you've got equity in your house, great. Don't go invest it anywhere, because if you do it with your mindset of gambling and markets, you're going to blow your money and probably lose it. You need to start thinking more like a real safe investor, someone who is actually conservative, not says they're conservative. And then you start to use ways to say, hey, how can I take that $300,000 to $400,000 equity in my home and get that start paying me at least $2,500 to $3,000 a month? And if I get it as a HELOC, well, whoop-de-doo, I pay a whopping, $900 or $1,000 a month while I'm making 30, 3,000 or more a month.
Totally. I mean, I think it's such a good point. I mean, I threw out that word conservative, but I completely agree with you that it's actually just people who are, you know, maybe fearful or don't understand or haven't taken the time to really, you know, and I mean, it's not necessarily their fault, but just like haven't taken the time to understand, well, how do you actually get your assets to work for you? And, you know, yeah, I love it. Like, are the masses financially free? No, they're not. So
you're right. It's not their fault. It's because the financial institutions are really incentivized financially, including financial advisors, to sell you their stuff, not to do what works, but to do what they offer. So yeah, you want to watch out for that kind of a self-interest there.
Yeah. So just because I don't like fully understand, because I've never really used a financial advisor or ever. Mm-hmm. Can you explain the compensation?
Yeah. So financial advisors are paid one of a few ways. If they offer insurances, they get paid off the fees and commission they earn. Like I mentioned earlier, right? Like that's even the guys that do infinite banking have their self-interest involved in trying to charge you more on insurance costs, right? Mm-hmm. The other way is with mutual funds, right? Which is, I had a securities license back in the early 2000s. When I would sell mutual funds, I would be paid based on the assets under management. So the more money you invest with me, the more I get paid. So say for example that, and this is, you know, it varied, but easy numbers, right? Many money managers and financial advisors out there, which are really just putting your money in places that they don't do anything with. They just they really are picking lotteries, you know, for you. They throw it in there and they might charge you a 1% management fee. So if you have $500,000, they're getting paid $5,000 a year, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like much, but when you lose money, they still make $5,000 a year, right? Oh, maybe they make less because you went down to $400,000. So now they're getting paid $4,000, but they're still getting paid that money. So naturally, their self-interest is to tell you to always save. That's why you've been told to save everything, you know, save as high a percentage as possible, let it sit there, don't pull off more than the interest. In fact, pull out less than the interest so you don't run out of money. So it keeps growing and compounding. That's good for the mutual fund companies because they're also charging those fees to get that, but they pay those advisors. The advisors are just middlemen, they're brokers, right? That's why they're financial brokers. They're just brokering the deal. The top companies like Fidelity, Goldman Sachs, all those companies are making usually at least 1 or 2%, while they might pass those commissions on down to the financial advisor who is incentivized to keep you in those funds, to not ever get out. And that's why I have so many clients, and you probably have seen people too that say, oh, I wanted to do this real estate deal, but my financial advisor said it was a bad idea. They said it was a horrible idea. Well, of course they say that because they don't make money when you go and invest outside of their plans, right? They don't like it. They mm-hmm. want you to keep your money with them and not ever touch it. Mm-hmm. That's what you got to watch out for. I mean, and there's annuities. Like I remember there's annuities that would say, hey, we'll pay you 6 or 7% of whatever they invest with us. So you put $500,000, woohoo, I just made 30 or 35 grand because your money is now locked up for 10 years. You can't touch that money and mm-hmm. to pull it out. Right. So that's the thing, is that you really got to be careful. You got to watch out for that. And that's why financial advisors keep those assets under management. That's why when my friend asked me, how many financial advisors are financially free, not off the renewals, right? And not off the assets or management, the commissions they're earning, but actually doing the mutual funds that they've been selling people. That's why you won't find financial advisors financially free off just that. They have to have commissions coming in to actually have a good life.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing those insights and for just all the other stuff you shared, Chris. Really, really appreciate it. And yeah, I would now like to invite you to share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and anything else you want to share.
Yeah, there's two great ways you can follow me. I mean, other than social media, you can always look up at Money Ripples anywhere you go. But you can follow my podcast, The Chris Miles Money Show. That's on iTunes, YouTube, wherever you go for that. And then you can also go to our website, moneyripples.com.
Awesome. Well, it was really great having you on. Tons of great insights and stories, and loved it so much. So thanks, Chris. We'll see you next time.
Such an honor. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com. for tons of free educational content to further your success.